From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, the race for governor in Louisiana. David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, is running against Edwin Edwards, who's been accused of corruption and womanizing. What does this campaign have to tell us about race and politics in America? We'll talk with one of David Duke's campaign managers, the leader of an anti-racist coalition working to stop David Duke, and two journalists following the race. David Duke, Edwin Edwards, Contemporary Racism and Old-Style Louisiana Politics, coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. A bill to extend unemployment benefits for victims of the recession won resounding approval today in the U.S. House. The $5.3 billion measure would provide as much as 20 weeks of additional unemployment insurance for people who've used up the standard 26 weeks of benefits. The Bush administration said it approves of the latest measure after the president vetoed two similar bills during a four-month struggle with Democrats in Congress. House members passed the measure today on a vote of 396-30 and passed it along to the Senate, where it's now being debated. Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell promised to send it on to the president as quickly as possible. Leaders of El Salvador's left-wing rebels announced today they'll start an unconditional unilateral truce starting on Saturday to try to speed up peace talks. From San Salvador, Tom Gibb reports.
The rebels say they will stop all offensive operations, attacks in urban areas, and economic sabotage. The communique from the rebel high command was announced in Mexico City, where peace talks to reach a definitive ceasefire are still going on. The rebels say they will maintain the truce indefinitely unless the talks break down completely. In reaction, President Alfredo Cristiani called the move a sign of good faith on the part of the guerrillas and promised to study possible reciprocal measures by the government. The unilateral ceasefire follows several weeks of fighting. Rebel units have been mounting attacks in response to months of large-scale army offensives inside guerrilla-dominated areas. For National Public Radio, this is Tom Gibb in San Salvador.
A government advisory panel today recommended that silicone breast implants be left on the market, even though there's not enough evidence to show that they're safe. NPR's Michael Scholar has more.
Most of the 2 million women with silicone implants say they are pleased with them, but some have complained of serious complications, ranging from pain to life-threatening illnesses. A scientific panel appointed by the Food and Drug Administration has spent several days reviewing safety data on 7 silicone implants. And in each case, the advisory group decided there was an appalling lack of information to support the implant's safety. But in a unanimous vote, the panel said all women should continue to have access to the silicone implants, even as more research is required. The government advisors say the implants play too important a role in women's health to take them off the market. The FDA is expected to decide the fate of the implants in January. This is Michael Scholar in Gaithersburg, Maryland.
Stock prices were down slightly today despite news that inflation remained low at the consumer level. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost just under 2 points to finish the day at 3,063. Declines edged advances in heavy trading of 200 million shares. This is NPR News. For the second time in the past 2 days, the House has rejected legislation that would replenish the Federal Deposit Insurance Fund. The bill would have authorized the FDIC to borrow enough money to protect the nation's 110 million bank depositors. The legislation has been embroiled in controversy over provisions that would pay off the borrowed money by increasing insurance premiums charged to banks and by selling off the assets of failed banks. The measure was rejected today on a vote of 227-191, despite appeals from President Bush and congressional leaders of both parties. The White House tried today to further distance itself from ex-Klan leader David Duke, who's running for governor in Louisiana as a Republican. NPR's Richard Gonzalez reports.
The White House and the national GOP leadership are worried that if David Duke wins the Louisiana governorship in balloting on Saturday, then the party will be targeted by Democrats as having racists in its ranks. The president has already denounced Duke as an insincere charlatan, but should he win, White House spokesman Marlon Fitzwater says Duke won't have any relationship with the White House. Fitzwater says that Duke's Democratic opponent, Edwin Edwards, is leading in the polls, in his words, so we'll wait and see. Fitzwater was also asked about reports that conservative commentator Patrick Buchanan might run against the president next year. Fitzwater tried to laugh off that possibility. We already had one Buchanan, he said, a reference to America's 15th president. I'm Richard Gonzalez at the White House.
The number of Americans filing new applications for unemployment benefits was up sharply at the end of October. The Labor Department reported that 454,000 people put in new claims for benefits during the week that ended on November 2nd. That was about 33,000 more than those who applied the week before. Analysts said the figure could mean the nation's unemployment rate will rise by another 0.1% in November. The rate gained 0.1% in October, rising to 6.8%. This is NPR.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. When America wakes up this Sunday morning, either David Duke or Edwin Edwards will be governor-elect of the state of Louisiana. Duke is a former Grand Wizard of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan and founder of the white supremacist group, the National Association for the Advancement of White People. He spent the past 2 years in the state legislature. Duke says he's changed, both politically and spiritually. But many of his opponents say he's merely toning down his rhetoric in order to strengthen the foothold of racist extremists in American government. Duke's opponent, Edwin Edwards, served 3 terms as governor in the 70s and 80s. He was twice indicted on federal racketeering charges, but never convicted. And he's had a reputation for womanizing and gambling. He also says he's reformed and sees this race as a chance to clear his name. What does this campaign tell us about race and politics in America? We'll talk with several people on today's show. The first is Lance Hill, executive director of the Louisiana Coalition Against Racism and Nazism, a group created to stop Duke's political influence. I asked Hill if he thinks that everyone who votes for Duke is a racist.
I think that the formula might be described this way. All racists are David Duke supporters, but not all David Duke supporters are racist. It's true that there is probably a small percentage of the Duke vote which is attracted to Duke because of other issues he runs on. I can't imagine what those issues are because he does not have an educational program. He does not have a jobs development program. Every issue that he's identified with is racially charged. It's welfare, it's affirmative action, it's crime. Those are the issues that he runs on. But perhaps there are some people who warm up to his populist appeal, his playing to their resentments of elites and entrenched bureaucracies.
What has the strategy been for your group, the Louisiana Coalition Against Racism and Nazism?
Well, from the very beginning, we've argued 2 things. One is that you have to tell the truth about Duke. He is part of a national socialist movement, of a Nazi movement. He's been tied to it since he was 16 years old, and he's been seeking, along with many other people, a political strategy that will give them a mass popular base. And they found it with these issues and with this electoral approach. That explains why his campaign manager in 1988 was a former commander in the American Nazi Party. This is a political strategy, and Louisiana is the laboratory for the racist right. Now, what we've done is say, first, you've got to tell people that this is not another George Wallace. This is not Republican racial divisiveness. This is something more virulent and more dangerous. Second, though, we've argued that you have to engage the racial myths that perpetuate this Duke movement, that impel this movement. And those are many myths that many white middle-class liberals as well as conservatives, I think, subscribe to. The idea that crime is a character product of the character flaw of recent immigrant groups or blacks, or that unemployment is voluntary. It's not an economic product of the deteriorating conditions in America. So we've gone through and systematically challenged those racial myths and argued that the only way you defeat David Duke is to defeat the belief system that underpins his support. In other words, the problem in Louisiana is not David Duke, it's the voters and their own prejudicial beliefs that drive this movement forward.
When David Duke was in college, he was affiliated with the American Nazi Party. He was a devotee of George Lincoln Rockwell. After college, he switched his affiliation to the Ku Klux Klan. Do you know why he switched?
Yes. David Duke's life has been an odyssey in which he, in many ways, represents the search by the Nazi movement for a strategy to develop a mass-based political movement in this country. You mentioned his mentor, George Lincoln Rockwell. Rockwell, in a book that he penned, an autobiography called Nick's Time, the World, actually laid out in the early 60s this strategy. Rockwell argued that the Nazi movement should use the electoral arena to legitimize and give respectability to its views and to position its candidates for the ultimate constitutional seizure of power. Once in power, which would be a consequence of some social or economic crises where people turn to this authoritarian solution, then, once in power, the Nazi movement would move quickly to dismantle our free and democratic institutions. This was literally a strategy that Rockwell proposed in the 1960s, and this is what Duke has been doing. First, he experimented with National Socialism, wrapping himself in the ornaments of Nazism, the swastika and the jackboots. And he found that Americans would not swallow that. They didn't find that palatable. So then he moved to the Ku Klux Klan. Same politics and same views, but this time dressed up in a traditional form of American racism. And by 1980, I think he had exhausted the possibilities of that. In the 1980s, then, he took a three-piece suit, blow-dry approach to the same politics, and that began to provide some results in the late 1980s, and particularly when he took that approach into the electoral arena, he discovered that if he was willing to moderate some of his views but retain the racist core of his appeal, that he could enjoy widespread success because there was a resurgence of racial resentment and anger among whites. So this is what I see as a consistent building of a National Socialist movement in this country, tailored to the traditions and the peculiarities of our American political system. And that is what Duke is trying to build, and that's why he's spending so much time on national media, because he knows to build a movement, he's got to get outside of Louisiana, he's got to identify his supporters, and this is what this campaign is providing him, a forum to develop that movement.
So you see David Duke as being at the vanguard of an attempt of the racist right to make a legitimate entrance into American mainstream politics.
Yes. Now what we're seeing is not just David Duke, but former members of the Klan of the Nazi movement, anti-Semites and white supremacists all over this country, moving very quickly to develop a new radical racial right. And I think that we're going to see that emerge in the presidential campaign next year. There's no doubt in my mind that David Duke will run for president, and if not him, some Duke-styled candidate. And they're going to try to wedge off from the Republican Party a hardcore racist sector. And the Republicans are going to have a very big problem because this is going to be built within their own party.
Do you think that David Duke is opportunistic enough to sell out his views so he could get more power?
Well, he's certainly been willing to compromise his public allegiance to white supremacist and anti-Semitic principles in order to expand his electoral base, but he is not a complete opportunist. He does not go on national television and insist that that Clarence Thomas is wrong for marrying a white woman for no reason at all. The reason he makes that argument is because he knows that that will allow him to retain a distinct racial identity. If Duke was just looking for votes, he would say what would be popular, which is, well, it's fine for blacks and whites to intermarry, or Jews and Christians, but I'm against affirmative action, I'm against welfare, and I'm against set-asides. Duke doesn't say that. He makes it very clear that he hasn't changed, that there are elements of his old beliefs that he retains. And that's because he is, in a classic sense, a political visionary. He's trying to build a movement. He is not just trying to advance his own career. He wants executive authority through the presidency so that he can reorder America along the segregated racial lines that he's dreamed of all of his life. And I think his recent statements make it quite clear that he is not a complete opportunist or sellout, but he's trying to build a movement around a set of political principles.
Based on David Duke's past affiliations and past public statements, do you think that there's any difference between where he stands on people of color and of Jews, and of which negative would take priorities for him, would take priority for him?
In David Duke's political cosmology, the Jew is the central satanic figure. He does not believe that Jews have souls. The religious Christian tendency that he is a part of, that he has defended as recently as 3 or 4 years ago, is called Identity Christianity, which believes that Jews descended directly from Satan. Duke has always attributed, in his private conversations and interviews and the like, always attributed the woes of the world to Jews. He thinks blacks are simply pawns in an international Jewish conspiracy. Now, in these campaigns, he has not highlighted his anti-Semitism. He's used code words to build anti-Semitism, but he, in fact, is training a generation of young white people to become anti-Semites. There was a confrontation in one of the suburbs here a few days ago during a debate that was actually a televised interview with Duke, and what was particularly unsettling is that a young woman had a poster that said 6 million died, and she was surrounded by a group of Duke supporters, young Duke supporters, who were deriding her for saying that, and said, no, it's not possible that 6 million died. That's just a big exaggeration. So what's happening is that if it's politically expedient for Duke to invoke his anti-Semitism, he will. He's holding off right now because it's not morally acceptable. But I think we'll see in the future, if it's to his advantage, that he will suddenly shift to a much more anti-Semitic approach. But Jews are at the heart of what he sees as the problem of America.
Do you think that there are young white voters in Louisiana now who came of age after the Civil Rights Movement, who never experienced segregation, who know a lot less about the Ku Klux Klan, who aren't experiencing this election in the same way, who aren't seeing it in the same way, and who don't have the same experience with overt racism that people who are older have?
Well, I think that to some extent, young white voters, and this is probably where Duke has his greatest, broadest level of support, and also the most intense level of support. Young white voters do not think of themselves as self-consciously as racist and bigots. They've grown up in the last 20 years in a world in which blacks had full civil equality. They tend to think that the crime and poverty that they see in the black community is a product of some character flaw in blacks, and they have not seen the 15-year process in which the black urban areas were devastated by the post-industrial society. They don't understand the economic forces that have been at work. So it appears to them that the problem is not that there is a lack of opportunity, but rather a lack of ambition and drive among blacks. This is a very fertile terrain for a racist movement, because in addition to that, these young people are competing for educational opportunities and jobs with other young blacks, and they want every edge that they can possibly get, even though affirmative action, I think, in very few situations, prevents them from attaining their own goals in life. Most young whites tend, at this point, to blame whatever the failures of the system might be on blacks. In other words, they don't see the problem as a failure of the economic system to provide opportunity for everyone, but rather they see it as a failure of the system to give them equal opportunity. So we need to have a dialogue in this country on these issues, on the question of what causes poverty, on the question of why is it hard, more difficult to get an education or to buy a house or to find an entry-level position. We need to open this up because part of Duke's appeal, I think, is that he does respond to rational grievances. I mean, there are both rational and irrational grievances that fuel the Duke movement. And ultimately, the solution to David Duke is not a critique of his own racial ideas. We've got to have that discussion and open that up in the 1990s. But ultimately, the solution to Duke and his movement is the creation of a political alternative.
Lance Hill is executive director of the Louisiana Coalition Against Racism and Nazism. We'll be back after this short break to talk with one of David Duke's campaign coordinators. This is Fresh Air. David Touchstone is David Duke's campaign coordinator in the northwest part of Louisiana. He's a lawyer in Shreveport and has known Duke for close to 20 years. I asked him if he thinks Duke is a racist.
No, I don't.
Do you think he used to be a racist?
Well, I think by some definitions of that word, the problem with that word is it seems to have different definitions at different times, so I guess it depends on what you mean by it.
Well, what's your definition?
My definition of racist is a person who believes that you should apply different treatment to one ethnic group from that which another receives just because of their ethnicity.
And by that standard, was David Duke, a former head of the Ku Klux Klan, a racist?
I don't think that by that definition he was. Now, if you use a definition that it's a person who recognizes or believes that there's a distinction between races and abilities in races, I think that he would have been. I do think that he felt that at one time. Even back in his early days, though, David always campaigned for equal rights, which was a very unusual concept for a person who was in the Klan.
David Duke says that he's changed. But one of the people we spoke with for our program pointed out that many of the people Duke has surrounded himself with have not changed, and there's still a lot of people associated with hate groups or who are former members of hate groups. You, for instance, are a former member of the Ku Klux Klan.
I was in the Ku Klux Klan when I was in college at age 21 for 1 year. I've seen some things printed in the media about me lately that I was some type of leader or something, which is absolutely ludicrous. I was in it for 1 year, and I realized that that wasn't the way to do things, and I quit. And I've never been involved with any group like that since then, 18 years ago. Since then, I've gone on, and I'm an attorney and a successful business person.
Did you believe in the inferiority of blacks and Jews when you were in the Klan?
Not in Jews. I did believe that there was a distinction between racial capabilities at that time.
And you no longer believe
that? In fact, almost everybody in the South did. Almost all whites did in the South, I'll say that.
And do you no longer believe that?
I think that each person has individual capabilities and that they should be judged on their individual merits alone.
What would you describe as the priorities of the Duke campaign?
Well, number one priority is getting a handle on law and order. The crime situation is out of control in our state, as it is in most parts of this country, but we have an especially bad crime problem in this state, and that's the number one thing we want to get a handle on. And I would say number two would be getting more out of our education system than we are. Number three, in my estimation, would be getting a better handle on the welfare problem.
How would David Duke like to change welfare?
Well, of course, the first thing we want to do is we want to see a serious and meaningful system of workfare in place. There's been some talk about us having workfare here, but it really hasn't had any meaningful effect in our society. Now, what we mean by workfare is putting able-bodied welfare recipients to work. Most welfare recipients are on welfare because they haven't had a good place to turn, a good alternative to turn to. But we do have some people on welfare who simply are shirkers. A system of workfare would drive the shirkers out of the system, and it would give a sense of self-respect and self-worth to those people who just simply haven't been able to escape welfare. Then another thing that we want to do with welfare is get the cheating out of the system. There are a lot of people on welfare who ought not to be. They're not being put through the proper credential requirements now. I've heard all kinds of horror stories about that from people who've gone down to the welfare office.
Let me ask you, if it turned out that David Duke, although he's saying he has changed since he left the Ku Klux Klan, if it turned out that he wasn't being really honest about that, and that, in fact, in his real heart, he still believed in the agenda of the Ku Klux Klan, would that bother you?
Yeah, it would bother me. Being a lawyer, I always like to define terms. What do you mean by a Ku Klux Klan agenda? I'd like to know exactly what you mean by that. But I think that the attitude, if it means that he has an attitude of intolerance to other people and that he hasn't grown and learned that there's a place for all people in the world, yeah, that would bother me.
Is there any ambiguity in your mind that the Klan was something that wasn't something less than tolerant?
No, there's no ambiguity in my mind about that. I was just trying to understand what you were saying by that. I definitely think that the Klan was intolerant, and that's one of the reasons why I left it, because I saw that it meant something that I didn't want to, I didn't really want to be a part of that, and I didn't think that it could make any positive changes. I think ultimately that's why David left it.
Let me ask you this. You were in the Klan for just a year, perhaps
yeah.
a little bit more. It was years
right.
ago. You were 21.
Right.
This was in 1973.
Right.
And you decided it wasn't for you. You left it. You say
that's right.
you changed your mind. Does it trouble you that the person who you are working for believed in the Klan, headed the Klan, up until very recently?
Terminate his involvement with the Klan in 1978. So it's been over 12 years, or 79, I think it was 79. It's been 12 years since David was involved in it.
Well, that's still fairly recent. I mean, he was still involved with it for a pretty long time. It wasn't dabbling for a year as it might have been with you.
Right.
He went on to head it.
Well, I think that David made a mistake in judgment in doing that, but I'm convinced that he has a different perspective on things now. I accept that. I've talked to him many, many times, just, personally, and I think I know what his thoughts and feelings are, so I'm comfortable with him.
David Touchstone is David Duke's campaign coordinator for Northwest Louisiana. We'll have more on the Louisiana gubernatorial race in the second half of our show. I'm Terry Grossen. This is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. The nation is watching the gubernatorial race in Louisiana. Coming up, we asked two Louisiana journalists to give us their analysis of the race between David Duke and Edwin Edwards. Richard Baudouin, the editor of the Times of Acadiana, tells us how David Duke's politics and his avowed religious conversion are playing in Cajun country. And we talk with John Slade, editorial cartoonist for an African-American newspaper in New Orleans called the Louisiana Weekly. That's all coming up on Fresh Air.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Ann Taylor. Two Libyan military men have been indicted for the 1988 bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, that killed 270 people. Officials in both the U.S. and Scotland have announced arrest warrants. NPR's Ann Garrels has more.
Investigators had initially suspected Syria and Iran were behind the bombing, but officials said today there's no evidence either was involved. The turning point in the investigation apparently came when officials identified the origin of the timing device. They believe it was purchased by the Libyan government from a Swiss firm. Today's charges allege the two Libyans worked for the intelligence service, had access to the timer, were in possession of plastic explosives, and had the means to get the bomb aboard Pan Am 103 as unaccompanied luggage. The U.S. is demanding Libya surrender the two accused, though they acknowledge this is unlikely. White House spokesman Marlon Fitzwater did not rule out the use of force. While the indictment only identifies these two men by name, Fitzwater made it clear the Bush administration believes they were not acting on their own, but for the Libyan government. I'm Ann Garrels in Washington.
Tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of the signing of the Clean Air Act. But members of Congress say that the Bush administration is dragging its feet on regulations needed to implement the act. Today, a House subcommittee grilled EPA Administrator William Riley. NPR's Elizabeth Arnold reports.
In the past year, the EPA has proposed draft regulations that would place new requirements on industry and then reversed itself after White House officials weighed in. Today, members of the House Subcommittee on Health and the Environment pointed the finger at the Council on Competitiveness, a group headed by Vice President Dan Quayle, which reviews regulations to make sure they're not overly burdensome on industry. Democrat Jerry Sikorsky says it's a back door for businesses that want to avoid cleanup costs.
This isn't regulatory relief. It's polluter relief.
Administrator Riley told the committee today that the council has no direct authority over his actions. The Natural Resources Defense Council announced today that it will sue the EPA for missing key Clean Air Act deadlines. I'm Elizabeth Arnold at the Capitol.
In Moscow, seven Soviet republics have reached agreement on forming a new political union, in a move strongly supported by Soviet President Gorbachev. However, the powerful Ukraine is not in this group, thus casting doubt on how effective the move can be. In the past, the Soviet president has said that he will leave his post unless the various republics agree to work together to form a market economy. Under the plan, the various Soviet republics would be allowed their own currencies. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials moved down nearly 2 points to close at 3,063.51 in active trading. This is NPR News. In Royal Oak, Michigan, officials say that a fired postal worker shot 9 former co-workers, killing 3 of them, before critically wounding himself. A witness said that the man opened fire in at least 3 different areas. The post office was open at the time of the shootings, but no customers were among the wounded. A spokesman for the Postal Service said that the alleged gunman was a fired employee who lost an arbitration hearing yesterday in connection with a time card fraud case. In Washington, President Bush met today with business and Latino leaders for advice on dealing with the educational crisis. NPR's Claudio Sanchez reports.
Today, President Bush appointed 14 Latino educators and corporate leaders to his Commission on Educational Excellence for Hispanic Americans. They'll advise him on how to reduce the 40% dropout rate among Latino teenagers, raise their English language proficiency, and remove barriers to training and employment. Commission member Raul Izaguirre of the National Council of La Raza says the group has a long way to go because too many Latinos simply don't have access to an adequate education or government assistance programs.
Our immediate problem is to get equal access to resources and to scholarships. We're right now fighting very, very hard to make sure we get an equal chance.
Commission members will meet three times a year and are not expected to make any recommendations to the president until late 1992. I'm Claudio Sanchez in Washington.
Conservative columnist and commentator Pat Buchanan is said to be seriously considering challenging President Bush for the Republican presidential nomination next year. According to supporters, Buchanan has pretty much made up his mind to challenge Mr. Bush and will make his announcement around Thanksgiving. The 63-year-old former White House aide in the Nixon and Reagan administrations was mentioned last year as a possible challenger to Mr. Bush after the president abandoned his no new taxes pledge. This is National Public Radio News in Washington.
This is Fresh Air. To many Americans, the race for governor in Louisiana looks like a ballot on white supremacy. After all, one of the candidates, David Duke, is the former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. On the other hand, his opponent Edwin Edwards was accused of corruption and womanizing during his three terms as governor. Some people inside Louisiana say voters' motives for choosing Duke or Edwards may be more complex than they appear to outsiders. Richard Baudouin is editor of the Times of Acadiana, a weekly newspaper in Lafayette, Louisiana, an area with a large Cajun population, people of French descent. I asked him how Duke and Edwards are trying to win the Cajun vote.
It's sort of dangerous in a way, or it's a bit problematic to talk about, quote, the Cajun vote. Cajuns are represented in every occupation from fishermen and trappers up to presidents of banks and big corporations. So they really span the entire socioeconomic spectrum. In the past, there have been times when Edwin Edwards has been the Cajun candidate, in the sense that I think he appealed to people of Cajun origin because of his common ethnicity. That was certainly true when he was first elected in 1971. I don't see that magnetism or that ethnic attraction for Edwards today. He has Cajun support, but the appeal to them is not so much because of a common ethnic background, but because of other reasons.
What are the other reasons?
Well, I think in many cases it's familiarity, that they've seen Edwin Edwards in office and they like his style. He's done a lot for South Louisiana. When he was governor, he was very much of a project-oriented governor in the sense of let's build a highway, let's build a bridge, let's build a new hospital. So that some of the people in this area they find that appealing. Others, I think, and this is very important for the election, those people of Cajun origin and others as well who are more business-oriented, more kind of moderate conservatives, they are looking to Edwards now, at least the issue he's trying to sell them on is the fact that his election is necessary for the future economic prosperity of Louisiana. The message kind of is, well, I know you don't agree with everything I've done in the past and you don't always like my style, but if David Duke is elected, the state will have economic disaster. If I'm elected, I've proven in the past that I can bring industries in, I can work with local business people, I can put together coalitions to bring more jobs to the state. So his appeal then is to those moderate to conservative Cajun voters, who many of whom supported Buddy Romer in the primary election.
Now, how is Duke running his campaign in your area?
Duke is running pretty much here, as he is other places, as the quintessential anti-establishment candidate. He is comparing Edwards to the special interests, and David Duke is the man for the little guy. And that has had a bit of appeal here. Let me say that South Louisiana, like the rest of the state, has had serious economic problems in the last 10 years. So he is talking to the oilfield workers who have lost their jobs. He's talking to farmers who have had problems with farm prices. And he's also been very effective in getting his message out to fishermen along the coast, particularly shrimpers. And the big issue with shrimpers is these devices that they're required to pull on their nets called turtle excluder devices that are mandated. And it's a very controversial issue among the shrimpers, many of whom are of Cajun background. And he has more or less made the statement that he will be more effective in fighting the federal government to keep these turtle excluder devices off the nets. And he says that the state has not been a strong enough advocate of the of their um, of of their interests. And I think that has played well among the Cajun fishermen.
Do you think that Duke is overtly or covertly playing on any racist impulses in the area?
Not in the sense of as Cajuns. I mean, I think the race issue is a very important part of this election. I don't think anybody who says that that's not a key element in Duke's message or strategy, I think, is wrong. The race element is there. I don't think he's necessarily playing it more here than other places. And in fact, historically, the French and Cajun Catholics of South Louisiana have tended to be more moderate on the race issue than other parts of the state. That goes back historically in governor's elections.
Duke has tried to distance himself from his own past. He says he no longer belongs to white supremacist groups, that he's been born again, and he's now Christian, and he's no longer preaching white supremacy. Have you come across voters who think that they can vote for him without also basically casting a vote for white supremacy? Do you think that voters feel that he can be separated from his past?
Yes, I think some voters fall into its various categories. Some people believe that is his past and they like it, and they think he's hiding it now, but they figure he's just doing that for pragmatic reasons, so they vote for him anyway, not despite his past, but because of his past. I think others feel that he has changed, and he's certainly been able to convince a number of people of that. But I think it's also important to realize that it's true around here, but it's also true in other parts of the state, that a lot of people are not necessarily casting a pro-Duke vote. They're casting an anti-Edwin Edwards vote. And by that I mean that there is a tremendous amount of dislike and distrust and anger and resentment of Edwin Edwards throughout Louisiana and in the Cajun areas as well because of some of his actions as governor.
You think that people are willing to vote for someone who headed white supremacist groups just to say no to Edwards?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. We've sort of evolved into this sort of moral equivalence here in Louisiana where people, they line it up and they say, well, David Duke was involved with white supremacist organizations and has Nazi connections, and that's his past. And then Edwin Edwards has been have allegations of corruption. He's been indicted. He's been accused of being a womanizer and a gambler, and that's his past. And they kind of look at these as moral equivalents. And some of them say, well, I think the gambling and the womanizing and the corruption and that sort of thing is really worse than the white supremacist background.
My guest is Richard Baudouin, the editor of the Times of Acadiana, a weekly newspaper in Lafayette, Louisiana. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about the Louisiana gubernatorial race with Richard Baudouin, the editor of the Times of Acadiana, a weekly newspaper in Lafayette, Louisiana. A lot of people outside the state of Louisiana see David Duke's candidacy as a sign of how racist Louisiana must be if they've allowed someone with his kind of white supremacist connections to rise politically within the system. Would it be fair to categorize Louisiana as being more racist than other states in the United States?
It's hard for me to really answer that question. I've lived in Louisiana all my life. I've lived all over the state, but I've never lived anywhere else. And though I know a lot of people from other parts of the country, I'm not sure if we're more racist or not. My hunch is that we're really less racist than lots of the rest of the South, but then in general we have the same kind of problems as the rest of the country. However, I think that it's a mistake to see this election as a sort of laboratory or as a sort of example of a peculiar form of racism in Louisiana, because I think that the David Duke message can play in the rest of the country, and it's a very clever appeal, and it really hits on a lot of people's frustrations. And it's not all that different than what the Republicans have been saying nationally for the last 10 years. What his appeal to people is, in many cases, to the people that have just had a rough go in life, people that right now, particularly young people in the middle class who feel that they can't provide for their children the same opportunities that their parents provided for them. And people like that look around for somebody to blame, and he is offering them really targets that they can feel comfortable with blaming other than just looking at themselves or blaming the system in general.
Do you think that this election is creating tensions between blacks and whites in Louisiana?
I haven't sensed any of that here. I've heard just reports of it in New Orleans and North Louisiana, but nothing over here.
Is there much of a black or Jewish population where you are?
Well, we have about, in this Acadiana area, I guess the voting population varies from parish to parish, but it's 20% to 30%, maybe upwards of 40% in some parishes. But, you know, the Jewish population in Louisiana is low everywhere, very, very small percentage. I mean, in Lafayette, probably even smaller than other parts of the state. And that's sort of important because a lot of analysts, like at the Louisiana Coalition and people who have really studied Duke, feel that the anti-Semitism is a much more core part of his belief or of his worldview than what we anti-black or racist sentiments in that way. And if that's true, there's not much political bounce to that because we just have a small Jewish population in the state, and people just don't know very much about anti-Semitism. It's just not something that they've encountered in their lives one way or another because it's just not been much of an issue.
So what do you think it would mean for Louisiana if Duke wins or if Edwards wins?
If David Duke wins, I think we're in for political chaos for the foreseeable future for a number of reasons. First of all, I think that there will be an immediate recall drive begun in the state. In fact, there are already people talking about it. You only need one-third of the registered voters, so it's doable. I think we will see the cancellation of conventions, tourist-related business. And equally important, I think you would see lots of unknown, unproven, and untested faces in state administration. So I think you'd see chaos. I think you'd see a legislature that would attempt to block everything he did. So I think we're looking at a real chaotic time for Louisiana for the foreseeable future. With Edwin Edwards, I think potentially we're looking at some real calm. This state has undergone really intense political turmoil for the last 10 years. And I think people are really tired of politics. I think if Edwin Edwards can get in there and if he really is able to put together the coalitions that he now says he has of business and labor, of blacks and whites, of conservatives and liberals, that is the potential to have a quiet spell in government, assuming he does not go back to some of his old ways in terms of running government and does not rile up the media in the state to where we're back to lots of investigative stories about what he's done and questioning of his motives and so forth.
Where do you think this election fits in terms of the cycle of Louisiana politics?
Well, it's a bit unusual. It's not the traditional cycle in Louisiana has been that we have a reform governor and then we have what we call a populist governor, and they tend to go back and forth. We don't have a reform candidate in the runoff. Both of these, Edwin Edwards clearly comes out of the populist tradition in Louisiana politics. David Duke is as a cover story in the New Republic this week says, is one of the new populists. Rather than railing against big corporations, he rails against big government. So we really have, in a sense, and some history professors would beg to differ, but we do have two, at least small P, populist candidates running.
Have you seen any interesting changes in Duke's campaign?
The biggest change in David Duke, and the one most noted, has been his increased use of Christian imagery and Christian symbolism and Christian apologies for his past behavior. Beginning very dramatically after after getting into the runoff, he began to talk quite in depth and in quite detail about his conversion to Christianity, about his born-again experience, about the fact that he prays and that he has gotten forgiveness for this. And he's used this in a very clever way for two reasons. First of all, it gives him an entree into a small group, but really a very important group of voters in the state, the fundamentalist Christians, who make up an important part of the voters in the state who tend to vote, who tend to be somewhat politicized, and most of whom in the primary election voted for the man who ran fourth, Congressman Clyde Holloway, who had a tremendous amount of support among the fundamentalist evangelical Christians. Secondly, in a bigger picture, it's given him an out when people say, well, what about all these things you said in the past? He says, well, I'm a Christian. I've been forgiven. I was too intolerant then, but now I'm a changed person. And again, that plays well with some people because many people have had conversion experiences where they went from one aspect of their life and now they're going into something else. I think the Christian, playing the Christian card, so to speak, may help him in some parts of the state. It's a potential problem in the South Louisiana area, particularly in the heavily French and Cajun Catholic areas, because Catholics traditionally have not found that an appealing message. This overt and excessive use of Christian imagery is not really consistent with politics in the Catholic areas. You just don't hear candidates talking about that a whole lot. He also talks a lot about the born-again experience, which is, again, something that most Catholics are not familiar with and in many cases are not very comfortable with. So it is possible that by his heavy use of that campaign tactic that he will potentially alienate some of his voters in the Catholic parts of the state that otherwise might find some appeal in his economic message.
Richard Baudouin is the editor of the Times of Acadiana, a weekly newspaper in Lafayette, Louisiana. We'll talk with the editorial cartoonist of an African-American weekly in New Orleans after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Let's check in with Linda Wertheimer and see what's coming up on All Things Considered. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Terry. The Soviet Union has changed its name to the Union of Sovereign States. We will look in on the panel which is trying to make a decision about the safety of breast implants. There are charges in the air disaster over Lockerbie, Scotland. We'll be talking about negative campaigning, which is what is going on in Louisiana, and more about the race between David Duke and Edwin Edwards. There's been a mass murder in Detroit, again in a post office. And we will look at the compromise on unemployment compensation reached last night.
Thanks, Linda. That and more on All Things Considered from National Public Radio. With issues of racism and anti-Semitism at the core of the controversy in the Louisiana gubernatorial race, we called John Slade, an editorial cartoonist for an African-American paper in New Orleans, the Louisiana Weekly. What impact would it have on his life if David Duke were elected?
This is David Duke we're talking about. He's a lightning rod. I can imagine every legislator having to, you know, deal with his legislation and things in the state house. It's not like David Duke can actually send us back to Africa, okay? I mean, he talks the big talk, but basically he's a little short of know-how on even to do some of those silly things. And I don't think, I really don't think it's going to be as horrible as some people might suggest, because he can't kill us all, he can't put us in concentration camps, so it's really not a whole lot of really horrible things he can do, but it will cast a pall over people's spirits. I really think if he wins, it'll really disappoint a lot of black Americans here in Louisiana, and some may leave.
Do you have black friends or Jewish friends who are thinking of leaving if Duke wins?
Only one that I've actually talked to has suggested that they may leave. Only one.
And what were the reasons he or she gave?
Just can't believe this guy's going to be elected. I can't believe you people are going to elect this guy. It's basically an astonishment. One of the things I've had to do, I've had a close friend who I had to, like, explain point blank, you can't be serious about Duke. You know, because some people look at David Duke as a big act, a big comedy show. Like, oh, he's shaking up the establishment. I mean, they look at him as like the political equivalent of rock and roll music. You know, daddy and mommies don't like it, so I will listen to it and turn it up louder until I had the point blank state. Let me explain this to you very distinctly. This man hates your friend, me. And that kind of shook him up, and he kind of realized exactly what I was getting on to. This man hates your friend. Now, you want to elect a guy that hates me? And that's the way you had to put it to him.
Do you find yourself looking at certain white people in Louisiana differently now, wondering, are you going to be voting for David Duke?
No, I don't feel like the guy in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, an alien, and who isn't. Because David Duke, see, there's two people. This is so much to say about David Duke. David Duke is positive proof that the economy across the country stinks. Plus the fact that the Republican Party has turned racial politics into a fine science. Of course, now like a mad scientist in the monster movies of the 50s, the monster's getting out of hand, they can't control it, and gee, they don't know what to do, it's the end of the world.
Can you tell us about any cartoons that you've done about the Louisiana election?
Oh, yes. Well, the day after he won, I did a cartoon in which a man was sitting in his chair looking at the television, and the announcer was saying, David Duke will meet Edwin Edwards in the governor's runoff election. And the man turns towards the audience, the people looking at the cartoon, and exclaims in big letters, "Holy sheet, S-H-E-E-T.
Got it.
And the next one I did was George Bush saying, David Duke and I are not alike. And in the next panel, David Duke is going, I will veto the 1991 Civil Rights Bill if I were president, just like President Bush vetoed it in 1990. You know, I'm like Bush, you know. And then the next, the last panel has Bush saying nervously, I wouldn't sign. Did I say I wouldn't sign? I said I wouldn't mind. And so he's busy signing the bill now, you know. So it's like David Duke has pushed George Bush to the left. So the right has become untenable for him.
Have you found that African-Americans and Jews have been divided about whether to ignore David Duke or whether ignoring him?
Oh, well, that was a story that came out here in the news. The Black American community is absolutely united. They came out the day after he got into the runoff. There was this huge influx of people standing in line for hours to register to vote, which I found very nice, but very sad. It's like, if you were here the night before, this guy wouldn't have gotten into the runoff. If Duke loses, will these people relax and go back into their lethargy? If Duke wins in spite of them coming out, will they conclude that politics is absolutely useless and never vote again? That's what worries me.
John Slade is editorial cartoonist for the Louisiana Weekly, an African-American paper in New Orleans. If you have any comments about Fresh Air, call our toll-free listener line at 1-800-NPR-WHYY. That's 1-800-NPR-WHYY. I'm Terry Gross.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by this and other NPR member stations. This is NPR. National Public Radio.
At the recent Middle East Peace Conference, new faces emerged as Palestinian leaders. On the next Fresh Air, we look at what new directions the movement for a Palestinian state may be headed in. We'll talk with Edward Said. He's a member of the Palestine National Council and a professor at Columbia University. I'm Terry Gross. I hope you'll join us for the next Fresh Air.